May know we've got Arthur Salisbury's going to phone in as well from your fanzine as well, Ken. So we'll have a chat with Arthur at about 8:30 as well. So we will speak to him about info. But we've got about a couple of minutes before we have to go into the news and that. So how did you must have been absolutely over the moon with the result last Saturday?
It was a bit of deja vu, really, because. And I'm not saying this just because it was the same scoreline, but travelling to Maidstone and travelling to Margate both felt like really tough assignments. And they were, tough assignments. But they were games that were similar in so many ways that you know, we just grew in confidence the longer the score stayed at 0-0. And then, you know, getting on top, getting that first goal, the nerves, if there were any to start with, you know, go completely, and the confidence builds. And I would say that, wouldn't I? But that I thought we were thoroughly worth the 3-goal margin on both games in terms of chances created. Maybe opposition fans would disagree. Maybe they'd say 3-0 was flattering. But, you know, on the day, they both games went according to plan, take the sting out of the opposition, quieten the crowd, and then build and build and build, and then a bit of a mini avalanche of goals right at the death, you know. So
yeah, I saw the goals on the Twitter feed, and there were some great goals there as well. So I looked at it and thought, well, I don't think I saw one chance next to no chances for Margate. So it did look like a.
I'm scribbling away most weeks, and quite honestly, and it's difficult to look objectively sometimes, you know, it's because you're seeing things through tinted specs. But I don't think they had a chance on target until about 5 minutes before half time, something like that. And for the home side in second position, that, you know, I think, okay, they would claim they had an off day. They probably did. But that's not bad, keeping them out in terms of chance, minimising the chances. And I think Brad Quinton, the manager, has instilled this play without fear. You know, he's got a good squad that are playing with a smile on their face and with a bit of freedom. But once you get a goal under your belts against the top side, it gives you even more belief, doesn't it? You know, even more confidence. Mm. I think Brad's main frustration at the moment is that we seem to get more fired up against the top sides than sides lower down. Mm. I mean, no disrespect, Leiston, very good side, came to our place and won 2-0. Could have gone either way on the day. There were some penalty shouts at both ends, but they were good value. They were good value, and really, in terms of the race for the playoffs, that was a 6-pointer, really. And we got another 6-pointer for playoffs now that we've won at Margate. Leatherhead, similar position, top of the current form table, and you know, whoever loses that one's going to be disappointed. Mm. If there's a draw, well, maybe, you know, you live to fight another day. But I think Brad would say he's just trying to instill into the side for the remaining games. It doesn't matter if it's Dulwich or Whittam, you know, in terms of near the top or near the bottom. Mm. Treat it as the same and have the same motivation, you know. It just so happens most of our best results have been against the top sides this year. So it's a difficult one to explain.
Yeah. Well, we'll be back with more Enfield Town Chat just after these messages, and we'll see you then. And this is the Rama Roundup Show, and we're back for the next hour before we have to go for more messages from our supplier. Well, from our different people that we've got on here, so we'll carry on with the show for the time. So back to sort of Enfield Town, which is just sound off air. I've got two young nieces that play for Enfield Town Ladies. So you've got a great girls set up over there as well. And I know you've definitely got a good boys set up over there, because we used to play against them when I was had a team for Waltham Abbey. Ken.
Yeah, we've got a couple of dozen teams going now, and that's increasing steadily. We've got a disability team as well that we're just working up. So it's great. And I was saying to you off mic, Dave, that fantastic to have so many volunteers to run these teams, you know. It's great having the enthusiasm for youngsters, either male or female, to join up. But, you know, to keep that sort of motivation going, you've got to have some parents and some other helpers to, you know, do all the necessary stuff to keep these teams going and to keep the youngsters interested. Absolutely tremendous.
So, I mean, the actual club itself, I mean, how's it going since the last time we spoke? And
we spoke, I can't remember exactly what month it was, but it was the year before last, was it?
Mm-hmm.
I think it was. It was 2013, wasn't it, I think. Mm-hmm. So we're still, you know, we're still thriving as a trust-owned club, a supporters-owned club on a trust model basis. But I had a meeting earlier today, actually, with a couple of other directors on how we were going to maximise income over the next year or two. Absolutely crucial. Apart from, you know, gate money and prize money and all that sort of stuff and money from the bar, a huge impact on, you know, the amount of income you get is through sponsorship. So we'll be working hard, as we always do, on some innovative ways to bring in sponsorship money. I think when I spoke to you last day, we were about to launch a community share scheme as well. And we did that in June last year. So that's going quite well. But we're not in the FC United bracket. We haven't raised millions. as is thousands, not millions. But nevertheless, you know, well, I think we're doing all the right things. And I think the main thing that fans or members appreciate is the openness with, you know, having an open business plan online and regular statements of how we're achieving our objectives or maybe not achieving them in one or two cases and what we're going to do to put that sort of thing right. So our AGM at the end of January was very well attended, and I think, yes, I mean, if your first team is doing well and or playing good football, then there's a lot of enthusiasm. And, you know, that's certainly the case at the moment. But I'd like to think that the dozen or so directors that meet up regularly are making decisions and then sharing those decisions with fans in an open and transparent way. You know, there are certain things, particularly financial considerations that we, you know, may have to be, you know, treated as sensitive. But broadly speaking, if any supporter has got any question about the club or the running of the club, they can ask on a match day or, you know, through a variety of other ways at Q&A sessions at meetings and all that sort of thing. So it feels good, but I do have to admit that when your first team are doing well, it's different to when your first team aren't doing well. It's not the be-all and end-all, but it gives the whole place that extra buzz. And then, you know, that buzz kicks into, you know, the number of volunteers you can get to do things around the ground or, you know, either on match days or between matches. And, you know, as I was saying, with the youth sections and the ladies sections, they would fold if we didn't have volunteers, and, you know, the club wouldn't be thriving in the way it does if we didn't have any, you know, the number of volunteers that we've got doing absolutely essential stuff, both on match days and in between.
So, I mean, I know you've sort of had new manager in as well. I mean, what was the actual sort of the plan, I suppose, for the season? Was it a case of mid-table? Was it a playoff?
I think that's right. I mean, we had, since the promotion from Ryman 1 North, we've had two seasons, one closer to the wire than the other. staying in the division, and we want to do that, and we invested quite a lot of resource into doing that. I think that if we finish mid-table or top half, that will be a good progress on the graph, and it's the sort of, you know, the sustainable, you know, up and up and up as graph that we want to see. But of course, if you ask the manager and his team, his management team, he would say we want the playoffs either this season or next season, and it's great having a manager with that sort of motivation, you know. But I think I'm right in saying that the win at Margate was a mathematical safety points total now. so that was great. That was great. But it does look as though whatever happens now, we're going to finish in our highest position since formation in 2001. So that's great stuff, really, on limited resources.
Because it's quite funny looking at the results. And you look through October, you had a sort of an unbeaten October. You know, two draws, five wins, and it's amazing. Even at this level, you always get sort of a month where it goes a little bit. I suppose the phrase is peaked on, and you look at December, and it's sort of like two wins and five defeats, and then, you know, sort of then turn it around again a little bit more in January, and then, you know, and then moving it forward from there.
I think when Brad Quinton won his manager of the month for October, we were pinging it about, and you know, some of those wins have been, you know, by quite high scores, and I don't think we had any major injury crises or anything like that, but I think it's fair to say that as the pitches got heavier and the weather started intervening a bit, you know, going into November, December time, we started suffering, because, you know, like our earlier conversation about how you can play football on 3G, you know, you can't ping it about on bumpy, muddy places, you know, in the middle of winter. And I think really what we reached a low point when we got thumped at Billericay just before Christmas, 5-0 at their place, and, you know, not taking anything away from them. They play in a certain style. They're quite robust. They're quite direct, and they've got a pitch that they're used to, in the same way as, you know, teams that play on 3G are, you know, used to that. But I think at that point, Brad brought in some players that, particularly at the back, that reinforced the spine of the team. So we were getting out muscled, I think, in certain areas, in certain games. And now I think we've got a really good balance of speed merchants and skillful players with people that can break play up and lay it off, you know. So I think that's, so there's been a, you're right, there was a dip in November, December, and now we're coming out of it again. So we'll see, you know, we'll see. I don't think anybody is going to say that they're disappointed at the end of the season if we're outside the playoffs, but, you know, well, I guess it depends how close we are after game 46. But, you know, nobody could have foreseen this sort of success at the start of the season, quite frankly.
I mean, when you look at the fixtures you've got left, I mean, you know, Leatherhead, Witham, Peacehaven, Lewis, Hampton, Richmond, Borough. You know, as you say, Leatherhead one's sort of like a 6-pointer one. And, but then the other ones on paper are maybe a little bit easier. And then you've got Bognor and Dulwich. And then it's AFC Hornchurch, East Thurrock, and then Witham.
Yeah, I mean, you know, you got Witham twice. They're going to be fighting for their lives, aren't they? Well, it remains to be seen whether Dulwich is still up there, doesn't it? By come Easter Monday, that you know, there could be something riding on that game or not. If there is, on an Easter Monday at their place, there's going to be quite a big crowd, I would think. But you got Hornchurch, they're going to be fighting. So there are no easy games at all. But purely on league table, you're right, Dave. It looks like Dulwich is the biggest game, purely on league table. But, you know, as what I was saying earlier, you know, the it's treating each team with the same amount of respect and motivation, isn't it?
Yeah. What's the Foster's Cup game is?
That's Middlesex Charity Cup. So that's the semi-final at home in April, and then the final is one of these either-ors. Harrow-Barrow are still in it, I think. But we're still in that one. That's our last cup interest. I mean, earlier in the season, we talked about Dereham, weren't we? I didn't go to that particular game, but we got edged out at Dereham in the trophy, which I think was quite a shock to the system, although they're clearly not a bad side. And then in the FA Cup, we did very well with, you know, a couple of games against Eastbourne before bowing out on penalties. And if memory serves, they went on to play Kingstonian away. Well, that would have been a tough one, but doable. And then Dover, I think. And then if you extrapolate that, Dover played Palace, didn't they? So I think next season we'll be looking to have a little bit more of a run in the FA competitions, because that prize money is a good yeah. thing to have in the coffers, isn't it?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, you can see with Burgess Hill, I think he's only Dartford that beat him twice in both the trophy and the FA Cup. So it was only, you know, they were sort of like their bogey side this season. You know, to come up against the same team twice is, and I think the second time they were very unlucky. So I mean, I've seen sort of the video, the DVD and the video and stuff on Twitter. I mean, is social media a big thing for Enfield Town? Because, I mean, it seems like it is, because when I go on and tap in Enfield Town into Twitter, about four or five different Twitter feeds come up.
Oh, OK. I'm not a social media person. I'm the wrong age for that. But our webmaster, Dean Vale, he's younger than me and more savvy than me in terms of what hits the spot and what doesn't. And I think he does quite a lot of work in terms of linking up the main website with other social media feeds and all that sort of thing. But it's all down to participants, isn't it? Let's face it. We've got the Ultras, who are a small band of noisy people behind the goal with their own drum. And we've even got some people going on Twitter from Chile. I don't know if you've seen posts from Chilean towners. Absolutely incredible. Apparently that all started with some sort of local interest looking at non-league results from Chile and having some sort of non-financial sweepstake stuff on the results and all that sort of stuff. So it's absolutely incredible. And then on Saturday, we've got 50 or 60 fans coming over from Belgium, Beveren supporters, to boost the gate. They haven't got a game this weekend, but the relationship with them goes back a couple of years or more. We are proud to say that we were the first supporters-owned club in the UK. They're the first supporters-owned club in Belgium. I think they were formed in 2011, something like that, and we've played them a couple of times. One at home and one away. And, you know, fair to say we got on like a house on fire with all sorts of joint scarves and souvenirs and all that sort of stuff. And, you know, they've set the bar quite high by saying, right, OK, we haven't got a game that weekend. We'll come and watch you play. Because now we're going to feel as though we need to reciprocate, aren't we?
That should be good.
So I think Leatherhead might be a bit bamboozled by the fact that, you know, they'll be standing there and they'll be opposite a load of blue and white scarves, but there'll be 50 or 60 yellow and blue scarves as well, and maybe they do know what it's all going to be like if they've been on Twitter and Facebook and the websites and what have you. But it should be quite a good atmosphere.
So is it? I mean, I know it's sort of like what I suppose. What I know, people like Ray Dyer and other people call Mad March. I mean, is there anything going to be happening in Enfield Town? The way of transfers in Mad March? Are we expecting much traffic through and out?
I've absolutely no idea on transfers. We did have a flurry of people leaving and people arriving. It seems to have settled down now. That's not to say that it won't all stir up again. I think it's normally, I mean, in our case, it hasn't been triggered by results. It's been triggered by players who can't get into the squad on a match day. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the majority of our players are not on contract, and therefore you can understand if, you know, they're kicking their heels for 6 weeks, that they might be thinking about, well, where can I get a game then, you know? So I think that's all part and parcel of every team at this level. But the squad seems to be quite settled, and I think with the games coming up, the whole squad will be utilised. And I guess it's a bit late in the season now to talk about moving, isn't it? You know, unless, you know, there's some sort of dual registration arrangement or loan arrangement.
Yeah.
We'll see.
I think it's just one of those things, this sort of time with the transfer deadline coming up at the end of March, everybody's sort of going to be going out and maybe getting a few in just to make sure if we do playoffs or if we've got to worry about relegation or you know, whichever way it is, that make sure we get a few in just to make sure if we get an injury or anything like that coming up that we can cover it.
Be interesting, but I've got no insight on that.
Because you've got one of our old players playing for you as well, haven't you? You've got Mr. Magoo playing for you in midfield.
Yeah, he's just come back from a couple of games out suspended.
We
missed him against Leiston. But he came back for the Margate game. And so what I was talking about earlier, that spine of the side, you know, he's... right down the middle there, you know, he's breaking it up and he's going on runs and he's laying it off, you know, as you well know.
Mm.
So he's been quite invaluable. One of the candidates. We've got a few candidates, I must say, for Player of the Year. We'll have to see how that vote goes, but he's been quite consistent. I think he's only missed a couple of games.
Yeah. So what else can you tell us then about Enfield Town then?
We've got on Saturday, I mean, we always try and work things out for most home games in terms of, you know, something to keep fans occupied off the pitch. We've had the North London Brass Band play two or three times now, and they've got two or three more visits before the end of the season. This Saturday we've got North Enfield Food Bank represented, and people can donate non-perishable foods there, so that's a good partnership. Just so happens that's falling on the same day as we've got 50, 60 Belgians arriving, and they won't necessarily be bringing a loaf of bread each with them, but and you know, local sponsors like Jemco Toyota and people like that are often on our forecourt just inside the turnstile there. So you know, we're always trying to work out ways of you know, getting people interested beyond just turning up at 3 o'clock and leaving at 5. I mean, this week to coincide with the larger than expected bar contingent, we've got a vocal duo, a couple of ladies called Katie and Charlie. They're singing a couple of sets from 5:30 onwards, and I think if I look at the program, they're coming back as well. Yeah, the 25th of April after the Witham game. And then we've got some summer socials like trips to Ascot and stuff like that. Steve Reed, our social director, is the main instigator of that, with supported very ably by a committee. But as I said to you earlier, Dave, we're irrespective of what happens on the field. We're already looking to next season now in terms of trying to make sure that the money we've got to play with is broadly comparable or preferably more than we've had this season. Mm. And every club's in that boat, aren't they? Not everybody can get 2,000 people through the turnstiles every week like Maidstone. So you've got to look at different ways and trying to be a bit innovative about it. But, you know... there's a feel good at the moment, and long may it stay that way. I think when I last spoke to you, we were talking about feasibility studies on additional bar space, and I think we might be looking at that in a slightly different way. The latest project is looking at the feasibility of a 3G training facility and getting some income through that, through hire out, and then somehow bringing that into the club, possibly with additional function space, that sort of stuff. So that idea has drifted slightly into a different project. But I think it's fair to say that our bar space is limited on big match days. On Saturday, for example, we'll be having a marquee up to accommodate the additional numbers. But we still do have very good business through the bar with private hire functions. Mm-hmm. Bearing in mind every director is a volunteer, I don't think, though I say it myself, I don't think we do too badly. We're always looking to innovate and get some new ideas, rather than just saying let's leave things as they are, you know. Mm-hmm. And I think that's quite commendable, really.
So has the club sort of not gone down the route then of even looking at possibility of a 3G surface to play on?
Well, as we're looking at the possibility of training on one, I guess that's not completely out of the question. We haven't had a long debate about it. I think the discussions that we have had about that sort of thing have been short on the basis of prohibitive cost.
Yeah.
But never say never, you know. It's step at a time. We're constantly juggling with priorities, and we will continue to do so. At the moment, it's a supporters trust club with volunteers. Who knows what will happen in 10, 20 years' time? Mm. The structure might be totally different. It might not be. But we just have to see, really. I must say, Supporters Direct have been very supportive. I think they're sending a rep down on Saturday.
Mm-hmm. Just bear with us, Arthur. We'll be in a sec.
And, yes, I knew there was one other thing. We won the Macron Performance of the Month for January. I know the February awards have been announced since, but Kelly, the Ryman League Secretary, is coming down to present an award for our win at Maidstone, which seems like a long time ago now. But
might be getting one for March as well.
I don't know. We'll see.
Well, Arthur's on the line, so we say hello to Arthur. Hello, Arthur.
Hello, how you doing?
Not too bad at all. So we've got Ken in the studio with us as well, from of course, one of the directors from your club. But we were just saying about performance of the month. We've got it for January. It's got to be sewn in for March, isn't it, surely?
I don't know. As to be honest, I haven't been to many games recently due to various. I wasn't at the Margate game or the Leicester one. I'm told they're playing very well.
Yeah, I mean to beat Margate, you know, at their own place, and you know, I think that's probably going to be one of the chances of getting a performance of the month.
Yeah, but apparently I don't know if it's true, but I heard they come into quite a lot of money recently for Margate. People have been calling them money bags Margate. And is that true?
Well, I think we had them on the program at the beginning, or sorry, at the end of last year. We had one of their guys that sort of gave us an insight to what this season was going to be like, and he said to us, watch out for us. He said, because our playing budget is going to be more than what Gillingham's was. So I think they have got a few bob down there, shall we say, to say the least.
Yeah, well, I hope they stay in, because I'd love to go to Margate. I was going to go this year, but my friend who normally comes with me got a job, sadly. So I wasn't able to go on my own.
So I mean, we was talking to Ken earlier on as well about the the Beveren links. I mean, do you know much more about that?
Oh yeah. I remember I was they came to our ground about year and a half ago now.
Yeah, it was summer cleaners, 2013, wasn't it? Yeah.
Yeah, I booked my ticket and everything to go to Belgium for the return game, but my group turned up late to the coach station, so they missed the coach to Belgium. And ended up spending the weekend in Brighton instead. But again, what I've heard was it was a great trip.
So, I mean, from your side of it, how do you see the season so far for Enfield?
Oh, it's been fantastic fun. I don't want to get drawn into. Yeah, actually, I will say. Yeah, I think we're going to go up. I think we should head for the top and keep pushing.
I don't know how many matches you've managed to catch lately, Arthur, but most weeks they're playing some good stuff, aren't they? There's the occasional blip.
Yeah, it's been. I mean, I'm a notoriously terrible reader of the game, but even I can see that they're just pretty nice, attractive football at the moment.
Yeah. Yeah, there's a lot of fluidity. We do come unstuck occasionally.
I've noticed Corey Whiteley's come back into a bit of form recently as well.
Yeah.
You were talking about Stanley Magoo earlier. Big fan of him.
Yeah.
There's always a Bill Shankly said every midfielder needs a buzzer, a contra, and a spreader. Well, he's very much the spreader in our team, Stanley Magoo. Mm.
I think for me, the thing about Corey is his ability to win the ball in the air against big centre halves.
Yeah, because he's tiny, isn't he?
He's not exactly a midget, but he's you wouldn't think looking at him that he can turn people and isn't afraid of a challenge, is he? You know, he can smack into people. When he got his goal at Margate, he had to get his toe to the ball before their keeper and a defender, and you know there was a three-way sandwich, and he managed to nudge it over the line. You know, he's got
it all. I don't know why he's playing at this level, to be honest.
Yeah.
Well, I think he's the only player on a contract.
I think there's a couple on contracts at the moment, but he's certainly one of them. And let's face it, you know, I would think he will move on, but I would love to get another year out of him and you know, see what happens. You know, two bites at playoffs or better would be great, wouldn't it?
Oh, it'd be amazing. Oh, I still remember that Grays game in the playoffs a couple of years ago. Mm. My dad, he's a big man. My dad did a whole lap of the pitch after that. It was incredible.
But it's one of those things, you know, this football. I mean, I've only been involved in this sort of football for 3 or 4 years, and you know, and it just grips you, doesn't it? And I think, you know, if Harlow were lucky enough to get promoted this year, I think I'll be doing more than one lap round our pitch, because it's that thing where it just grips you, you know, so much that you sort of turn up, and I think whichever ground and whichever team you end up going on to support, it almost feels like an extended family of yours, because you know everybody that's there, and you know everybody's welcome.
That's completely. I've been following them for about 3-4 years now. I used to support Leighton, but they shut down. The chairman got 8 years for VAT fraud. But since I've been following Enfield, I've taken 3, 4, 5 new people along to it, and they'll instantly fall in love with it.
That's good stuff.
Fantastic. And I think, the thing is, the difference between that and the top flight is that the top flight, you're a spectator, a sort of detested spectator. Mm. But at this level, you're loved and you're part of it. You're part of the action. Mm. And also, you've got more, you know, you can stand, you can drink, and you can smoke on the terraces, which goes down well with a lot of people.
If you're introducing new people, Arthur, at each game, or at some games rather, that's really good stuff, and thank you for doing that.
I've got two new ones coming on Saturday.
Oh, well, thanks very much for doing that. That's, that's terrific. And also, we get the occasional rep from another club, who then sort of does good write-ups for us on Twitter and other social media. We had, I think it was the Watford programme editor turned up, ostensibly to do an interview on an old player who played for Watford and then Enfield, amongst others, Steve Terry. But he said he thoroughly enjoyed. I can't remember what game it was he came to. I think it was Hendon, which I think we won 1-0 with a late goal. Mm. And then there was another guy who I don't think he followed any specific club, but he just announced himself as a sports blogger. And he turned up and he thought it was fantastic and did all these blogs all over the place saying, you want to come down, it's unbelievable, da-da-da-da-da-da, you know.
There's one blogger who was trying to come to the Ashford game before that got called off. Oh, I think okay. a blog that called The Beautiful Game, I think it was called.
That's the chap.
That's the one, yeah.
He eventually did turn up for 2 games, I think. And now he's disappeared into the sunset. I don't know if we'll ever see him again. But while he was around, he was giving us some good publicity.
Yeah, I've got. I don't know if I've announced this yet, but now on the airwaves, I may as well. And the last game of the season, home to Witham Town, is that it, isn't it? Last game.
Witham, yeah.
Well, my stepmom's a primary school teacher, and they're having a massive school trip to our game.
That's right.
So they get 50, yes. 60 new school kids there.
That's right. That's right. We've got that on our radar, and we're going to start giving that some publicity, you know, as the weeks sort of get towards that game. Yeah, yeah.
Mm, exciting times.
And that's fantastic because you get the youngsters in, you know, and who's to say those youngsters then, you know, they come in and, you know, next season they see that Enfield are playing again and they want to bring, they want to bring more people to the, you know, it's, well, want to come back again to see the first game of the next season or a friendly next season. And then you've got another set of fans then that are actually sort of coming in, you know, beneath the older generation that are there watching the football.
Absolutely. The only problem is lack of exposure. Because whenever anyone comes, it really is, you know, they love it. It's so much nicer than going and sitting down for 90 minutes watching some overplayed nambies on the field.
Hmm. Oh, absolutely. And I mean, it's the same over here. You know, we've got, I've heard people describe it, we've got sort of our ultras, as you can say, sort of over the far side of the pitch with their air raid siren back in circulation last week, and the drums and the chants and all the rest of it. And I even remember them saying, you know, last year that Jody Brown was on the show beginning of the season, and he turned around and said, you know, when we played Heybridge in the semi-final last year of the playoffs, he said, I had a feeling, he said, that the actual, your fans actually got to my players the minute they came out of the tunnel. You know, and these guys were literally right up against the tunnels, you know, chanting and shouting constantly for about half an hour. He said, and it just literally put them off their game. And, you know, we beat them for the first time in four, you know, on that occasion, and went into the final. So it was, it's one of those things, I think, with the ultras, your ultras, ours. I think sometimes, you know, they get bad press and stuff like that. But I think it's just a case of they're there to try and get under your skin. And if you let them do that, then, you know, you've got to be bigger than that to try and, you know, take it in the fun that it's, you know, it's actually physically meant.
Yeah, I think, I mean, Arthur will back this up, that the players always go over and thank the fans. The numbers don't matter. It's the noise, and every player says the same thing. It does make a difference, you know. Rather than playing in front of silence.
One of my first games about 3-4 years ago, there was just one bloke sort of singing on his own. And I was appreciated, but it wasn't really enough to sort of G up the players.
No.
But now there's a good 10-15 of us each game.
That's right. And you were saying, I think you used the phrase older generation. I think one of the things that has just come back into my mind to say is that when this club was set up 14 years ago, there were a lot of people of my vintage, middle age, who were saying, well, it will never be the same as what it was, with the old club being near the top of the conference at the time. But you are now talking about a new generation of people that don't actually remember that club.
Mm. Yeah, I was, 4 years old when it was set up, something like that?
Yeah, and even the old uns don't ever say, it's never going to be the same. Even the old uns have got caught up in the enthusiasm, and we reminisce a bit, but we don't ever say, but it'll never be like it was. You know, that phrase doesn't come into. And I'll tell you another good thing, and people of your vintage, Arthur, won't necessarily know who they are, but there's a long-standing fan called Glyn Smith, who runs an old Enfield players reunion club. And once every month, 6 weeks or so, if you go up into the bar, you'll see a dozen or so players going right back to the 60s. Arguably, most people don't know who these people are.
And, I had no idea that was happening.
And therefore, it's neither here nor there. But it's yet another dimension. These people don't have to turn up and watch, you know, people that are 30 years younger than they are. But they do, and they love it. And, you know, so you got old players who have only got memories in terms of their own playing days, but they come into the QE2 stadium, and they're enjoying it. And that's fantastic as well, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, I had no idea that was happening at all.
Mm.
I might have a word with one of them for the next fanzine. Our name dropper here is On The Town, only £1, the best fanzine in North London.
I'll try and grab hold of you, Arthur, either on Saturday or at a subsequent match, and maybe we can get you in contact with Glyn, the guy who runs this. I've done a couple of very small player features, and I was going to try and get bigger ones going. But again, that is very much I didn't want to go overboard with that because it's very much appealing to the older generation.
Yeah, well, sort of. Telling as well that those players aren't going to Enfield 1893, which I think is technically they've got the history of the old style, haven't they?
Yeah. No, that's absolutely.
So
right.
That was going to be my next question because of course Enfield 1893 play out of here.
They do.
And that would be my question because you've got the likes of AFC Wimbledon and you've got Milton Keynes Dons, and then one says one thing, one says the other thing. So with the two clubs in general, which one is the closest, shall we say, or the original Enfield that the older generation would know? Is it yourself or is it Enfield 1893?
Well, I'm going to be biased, but trying to look at it objectively, the 1893 club actually folded in 2007. And I think at that moment, that history ceased. When Town started, it made a conscious decision that it wasn't going to inherit the history of the old Enfield club. So it was a bit
good decision, I think.
It was a bit like the spirit carried on, but we were going to start from scratch with our record keeping and trophies won and all that sort of stuff. 1893 said we've got the history, and we said fair enough, but then they folded. Now they came back into play again, and I guess they still claim the history. I don't know.
Why did they do that? Because obviously they folded before I sort of became interested in Enfield Town. Why didn't they just sort of... Was there a big rivalry between our two clubs there? That's a bit before my time.
I don't... Well, there was during the period between 2001 and 2007, both teams were playing each other occasionally in cup competitions and a couple of times in league as well. But I think it's fair to say that they were offered the chance to merge both before they folded and after, and they said, no, we want to carry on the way we are. And I think, you know, whatever they want to do, they've done, and that's fine. It's not a major concern. On the face of it, you would argue it's a bit silly having two teams, you know, representing, you know, a relatively small borough. But hey, that's the way it is.
Yeah, and I've been back to a Goldstown Road since we left as well. Look, it looks terrible, decrepit old grounds now. I don't know what they've been doing to it.
Yeah, I mean, I think when we moved into the QE2, we took what was ours, which was a couple of stands and a bit of infrastructure, and I don't know what's happened since, but it was rightfully ours at the time, and you know, a couple of the stands that you can see in the QE2 now were originally at Brimsdale.
Yeah, it looks good. It was a charming old ground we were playing there, but now it looks, you know, post-apocalyptic. It looks awful.
But you're talking about Brimsdale, and of course there is now a Brimsdale merged with 1893. I think didn't. I mean, the word Brimsdale or the word Rovers isn't in their club title, but you know, that was an amalgamation. But now there's a new Brimsdale club that play at Goldstown Road, as I understand it, who we've recently signed three players from.
Yeah, is that Bobby Devine comes from Brimsdale, isn't he?
Yeah, it's Bobby Devine.
Or Clunderman's Pele.
Leon Wilson, and I'm going to have to. another one. Oh dear.
I haven't even heard of the second one, so. Is it Ricky Gabriel? Ricky, is he one of the new
Ricky,
ones?
Ricky, of course it is. Of course it is.
Got our third against Margate.
Yes, that's right. And so, you know, these three have been fantastic, and who knows what the future holds in terms of relationships between the two clubs, you know, in terms of player movements.
Mm. It's interesting because I didn't know you know, it's not saying that I've asked the chairman of 1893 what his feelings are. He's been in the show not so long ago because, of course, they're here and we brought him in to have a chat about his club and so forth probably about 3 or 4 months ago. But it wasn't one of the questions that was actually fired at him at the time. I was just curious. I just assumed, you know, that Enfield Town is the rightful heir to the name, shall we say, of what was there before.
I think it's fair to say that we changed our badge, although we kept the, you know, the griffin on it, or the Enfield Beast, whatever it's called. But we have not. We refer to the old club in a nostalgic way, but we don't write down, oh, and then we won that, and then we won that, and these were our players. It's not formalised like that. I think AFC Wimbledon, as I understand it, have been allowed to keep the history of the old Wimbledon club. And, you know, currently a lot of people just call them Wimbledon, don't they? You know, it's not the same scenario with us. Our honours board in the bar only goes back to 2001. And that's the way it should be, I think. It's a totally new club. But there are physical and spiritual links, you know. And I think that's the right balance, really.
And there is one member on the forum who gets very catchy if you refer to the club having won the Amateur Cup in 63 or whatever. People are quite careful to distinguish between the two of them.
It's a different club. It is a different club. But, you know, there are some links with the past. And as long as we don't let that drive any sort of, you know, unrealistic rewriting of history, then that's fine. Mm.
Well, we were just talking about, I think Arthur was saying about pushing for the playoffs. And I think we always got to have a look on this show, Arthur, is to have a bit of a laugh with the supposed predicted tables. And our next guest that comes on at 9 o'clock won't be too happy with this predicted table either. But it says from the bomb, it says the four teams that will get relegated into Roma North Stroke Roma South will be Bury Town.
Oh, I'd be happy with that.
VC The Athletic, Harrow Borough and Witham. And then going from 20th upwards, Hampton Richmond Borough 20th, Hornchurch, Lewis, Tonbridge Angels, Peacehaven and Telscombe, Canvey Island, Grays Athletic, Enfield Town in 13th, Leatherhead 12th, East Thurrock United 11th, then Wingate and Finchley, Kingstonian, Bognor Regis, Leeston and Billericay. And then there'll be a playoff semi-final of Margate versus Dulwich Hamlet and Hendon versus Metropolitan Police, and the champions will be Maidstone United.
Well, that's nonsense. That predicted table app, whoever it is, hasn't been to our games recently.
we actually had the guy in that does the football web pages, and we said to him then and there and then, because we always like to have a little bit of a laugh at it, because when we had it the first, I think it was the first week or second week, we looked at the Roma North Thurrock, according to the table, after 1 week, we're going to win the league. And they was only going to score about 30 goals and not lose a single game. The following week, they actually lost a midweek game. Mm. And when we came back and looked at it the second week, they were bottom. And it was very, very funny how they actually...
It's just some sort of extrapolation, isn't it, based on current trends, really. Yeah.
Which is... It'd be interesting. I mean, the Roma North itself, I mean, the Roma North says, you know, it's basically exactly the same as what the table states now. I mean, it just says it'll be Harlow v Wroxham, Brentwood versus Sudbury in the playoffs, with Needham being the champions.
Mm.
So with 9 points clear, and it says that Burgess Hill Town are not going to lose a game, which looks likely anyway, and get 120 points, so which is an amazing amount of points.
So I guess, Dave, your playoff... if you are in the playoffs, the chances are that both matches will be at home, won't they?
I would have thought so, yeah. Hopefully.
So that must make you feel good. Not delirious, because obviously you want to win the title, but you know, that must make you think, well, we'll get some good crowds for that, you know. And just one-off games, not two-legged, you know. It should hold you in good stead.
Yeah, I think so. It's just one of those things where, you know, as I said to you before at the beginning, you know, I mean, I dare say, you know, Margate would say, like, you know, if they got into the playoffs, the one team they wouldn't want to play is Enfield Town. Do you know what I mean? But a bit like us, when it's, you know, as I said before, the one team we don't want to see
you know, coming up against us in the semi-final will be Thurrock, because they have been our bogey side and been our bogey side for quite some time. So it's just keeping an eye on what's going on, trying to keep one eye on, you know, who's winning the actual the title. Hopefully it'll be us, but if it's not, then keeping that sort of close eye on who finishes fifth, because I think that's the position that could change quite dramatically and quite regularly.
Yeah, and I think conversely, if we do go on a hell of a run, and it would need to be a hell of a run, it's doable, but you know, it's still going to have to be a hell of a run to get into the playoffs, then the chances are both our games, if there are two, would be away. Mm. And I think most fans would be happy with that. For some reason, although if you look at the league table, our home record is better than our away record. But there's just something about coming into this, you know, those two away results and winning at Hendon, I might add, just to over-egg it a bit maybe. You know, I don't think we would fear anyone away in two away games. Yeah.
Well, you say that, but I can remember losing 6-1 to St Albans a couple of years ago.
Oh, yes.
Yes. I left when it was 6-0 before it got exciting.
Yes, well, that was admittedly against a team that were, at the time, one division higher. But we were on the slide then, weren't we?
I think what makes this predictive table stuff such a nonsense, it's so, as evidenced by our win against Margate last week, it's so unpredictable at this level.
Mm.
I think. But what people who fancy themselves as football analysts don't understand is total chaos out there. Nobody knows what's going to happen. So I'm going to completely throw all my money behind Enfield to go up this year.
Good for you.
I mean, you look at it as well. You know, after you say that, you know, everybody's saying, you know, like even in a division that Harlow are in, you know, the actual, you know, the season's over, you know, the championship's over, and Needham Market have won it, and Needham Market should win it from the position they're in, but. What people forget is because of the fact that, you know, the last but one game of the season is Needham against Harlow. If there's one slip up at all from Needham Market, you know, Harlow win the remaining games and they take the championship. So it's still all to play for, you know, in both divisions. I think for playoffs and for championship in North and the South, North and the Prem, the only thing that's a given is Burgess Hill Town are going to win the South Division because they're so far clear and not lost a game. So it's the only one that's probably not a given.
I'd be delighted for Harlow because Harlow to come up because Needham Market, that's in, was that in Suffolk somewhere?
Yeah.
Oh, I don't go to the Suffolk games. So I'd be much happier for Harlow to come up.
it'll be nice. I must admit, it'll be party time down here if it happens, but we'll see what.
So presumably, Dave, you'll take quite a travelling contingent up to Needham. I would imagine.
It'd be nice to go up there myself if you can get the time off work and stuff, but it's. It's one of those things where, of course, what you've got to remember is if it gets to a stage where there's a certain amount of points in it and Needham get what they need, of course, the trophy gets presented after that game.
Ah, so understood.
It could be one of those games where not only are you in the playoffs, but you've seen your competitors actually get the trophy presented to them on the pitch before, you know, after the game as well, which is a sort of a double kick in the stomach, if you know what I mean. You know, not only losing the title, but seeing them actually being presented with a trophy at the same time. But it's the way it's panned out, and I still expect it to go probably to the last game of the season, and it will certainly be interesting. It will be Chatham against Needham and Harlow versus Thamesmead, and it will be an interesting because Chatham had a say in. Where the trophy went, or where the last playoff place went last year, and it went in favour. I think they beat or drew against Thurrock in the last game, and basically gave Needham the last place in the playoffs. So maybe this time round it might swap round and go the other way, but well, fingers crossed anyway.
So what was the score here against Needham?
We won here. I'm not too sure what the score was. We had a young man playing at centre-half for us from Southend.
Right.
A gentleman called Daniel Matasuka that was on to one of their youth players. It was on. He played his first game for us on that day and basically made a bit of a mistake in almost with his first touch. And from there on in was probably one of the best defensive performances I've seen in a long, long time. Mm. So good that within, I think, a couple of weeks, he was taken back to Southend and was on the bench for the first team. So he was back in that first team running for the first team at Southend. So there we go. We won 2-1. There you go. Thanks, Ray. I couldn't remember what the score was, but yeah, he's the line dancing champion of Essex. He's listening to the show, so yeah, happy days. But I mean, so you quite confident then, Arthur, that that Enfield will make the playoffs?
Oh, I'm always flashly overconfident. So yeah, of course, my confidence is sky high this year because what are we 12th now? Was it 12th, 13th?
Yeah, yeah. And I mean, not being
that's nosebleed territory for us.
and if you sneak into that playoff position, the likelihood is it could be Margate or Maidstone, who you've already beaten already.
Yeah, yeah. I mean. Such as my luck, I wasn't at either of those games again this year. But I was at Maidstone when we lost 3-0 last year.
Oh yes, yeah.
Good memories of that day.
Yeah, we had a man sent off, didn't we? But arguably would have lost even with 11. But I just think we nobody's going to underestimate us. It's going to be tough, but. These results are eye-catching enough to put people on their guard, and I think Brad Quinton's philosophy is you treat every game on its merits, and you have a different type of opposition each time. And at this level these days, people watch opponents, you know, a match in advance, and then you pick your squad accordingly. So it's all you know. You could argue we've got some momentum, but then we did slip up at home to Leicester, and it is frustrating when you do a win one, lose one. We haven't drawn that many this year, so maybe we're due a draw or two. But you can't argue with the position we're in, as Arthur says. We're mathematically safe now, and we're just looking upwards. No, nobody's looking down at all. You know,
I'm just looking at the table. We're 17 wins. 3 defeats, 16 defeats, 52 goals for, 47 goals against. Goal difference plus 5, 54 points, and you sit only 7 points off the playoffs. So,
yeah. I think with 3 points for a win, anything is possible. I'll say that. Anyway.
Absolutely. Yeah. Arthur, the time has run away from us. Thanks very much indeed for coming on. I do wish you all the best for the season, and hope your your prediction comes true and you make the playoffs.
I always do. The pleasure's been mine.
Thanks, Arthur. Thanks very much indeed for your time. Thanks,
cheers.
Bye-bye.
And it's time for a few more messages, and then we'll be back with the one and only, I suppose on this show, one of the legends that we've had on this show, Mr. Tony Russell. He'll be with us in a minute, and I've got a special question for Mr. Russell if he's listening already, from a certain man called...